You're listening to WWBC Cocoa, Melbourne, Titusville, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Cocoa, Rockledge, and W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, and 100.7 FM.
Treasure Coast. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in sunny Cocoa, Florida. We're heard on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and everywhere on God's magnificent planet.
That's right. On 1510wwbc.com, you can listen live. Just hit that listen live button and get us on any one of your streaming devices. And then, of course, we also archive the shows there under the On Demand button. You can pick any Monday or just look up Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. All the shows are posted there and easily downloadable by that link right there. And then, of course, we share it on all of our social media, which is under Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. Of course, we're on all of it. We're on TikTok and Facebook and all those good things. And then, of course, on our website, SitaMediaInc.com. We share all the shows and little bio about all of our guests and some pictures from the show as well. And again, after 15 years, there's 52 weeks. You figure it out. 52 weeks times two times a guest. 15
it's
years.
It's difficult to even comprehend.
Right?
We don't
How
even
many
remember.
People we've had on the show?
We don't.
So the cool part about the website, though, Sita Media Inc. I was double checking it again. You can pull up shows from 10 years ago. Because I've loaded them all on there, and you can just pull them up by name now.
That's right.
So, like, if you know somebody that's been in town and want to get to know a little bit about their company or their business, then we'll make sure we get all that info out.
Well, today's show is no different, Ellen. For people who are tuning in for the first time to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, we heat up the airwaves here on Mondays. Myself, my co-host Ellen O'Neill, Danny runs our board. And Allie Tambor is a cheerleader of the show. She's a self-proclaimed cheerleader. She comes every Monday sit with us and hang out. And today I invited one of my good friends and ABWA sister, Maggie Hickson, is here.
Hey, Maggie.
You're right. And so on, excuse me. All right. I guess I'm just keeping. This is why I say Sita and Friends is fun, unscripted, informative, and quite educational. Because Danny here is telling me something. I'm sure he's educating me on something. But I don't know what it is.
Right.
But anyway, so we sit here and we
are blissfully ignorant.
Right.
How's
so
that?
We sit here on Mondays and we talk to people from all over the United States, all over Brevard County, Florida, all over the state of Florida, and all over God's magnificent planet. And we speak about things, issues. We speak about people who are advocates for clean air, water, sunshine. Maybe they want to tell you how to vote, which way you should vote, why you should vote. We talk to folks who are interested in teaching the population about financial literacy. We speak with people about child rearing. We talk to people about planning their pregnancies. Whatever it is, education, and opportunities. We also have people that want to talk about health and the well-being of citizens all over the United States. And today's no different. We have two segments today. Our first segment is a lady who's calling in from India. Mana is a new age guru who blends ancient powerful tools of transformation to fit today's modern life. And she's calling in from India. And my dear listeners, you will have to bear with us because she's calling us on WhatsApp. And Ellen is going to try to rig my phone, which has all the content for today's show, on a mic here, which... And so we'll wing it. And our second segment, we have a writer, a musician, a cartoonist, a filmmaker, and a philosopher, and also a podcaster, Mr. Mike Oppenheim. Mike is going to take time from his busy schedule today to call in second segment, and he's going to talk about his podcast, which is called Coffin Talk. Not Coffee Talk, Coffin Talk. And what his podcast does, he talks about walking in people's shoes just before they pass on from the planet, or putting them yourself in someone else's shoes and kind of finding life with purpose. And I think it's very interesting to have these shows together today because it's all about health and well-being. So I know Manna is on the phone and we're going to start off the show with her today. Ellen is making some dings and noises there. Okay, Manna, thank you for taking the time to call in on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends and speak with all listeners. Can you tell us a little bit?
Hi, Sita, how are you?
Hi, darling. Thank you. And thank you so much for calling all the way in India. And we are grateful that we can talk to you.
No, happy to be here.
Okay.
Happy to be here. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. So can you tell us a little bit about yourself and the business of yoga and well-being and your wonderful website? We just went on it. It's really well done. Talk to us a little bit about yourself.
So what we do here in Rishikesh is we teach, we combine ancient Indian wisdom, but apply it to new age problems that everyone has. So whether be it health, love problems, problems with money or spirituality in general, what we take is we take the wisdom from India and we apply it to day-to-day problems. So we teach people how to manifest health, manifest the perfect divine love that they want, manifest the job or the career or the money that they want in their life. And that's what we really do. More than that, we sort of work on the energy centers in the body. So in ancient India, we know that the body is seen as having energy centers, and there are 7 main energy centers. And what we do is initiate people into a daily practice where they can align their centers, and that automatically leads to an increased and a strengthened aura. And so then they can get magnetic and they attract what they want in their life. That's what we basically do here.
Yes. And, you know, oftentimes someone would say when something bad and like impending doom is going to happen, they say, I could just feel it in my gut. Is that part of the chakra system as well, chakra system?
I mean, the gut has its own energy center. In fact, we were talking about this in today's class. It's called the Manipura. It's like, so there is each chakra is attached to a different organ. And so for the gut, it's like a really important like fire center in your body. So that's really true. When people feel things in their gut, it's that chakra being activated. And so, you know, it's like different organs combined with different energy centers. So that's really true what you're saying.
Yeah. And so talk to us a little bit. How can a person incorporate the chakra system in their daily life?
So what we teach people is we first sort of teach them what each chakra is about. Each chakra has a different organ attached to it. It has different emotions. It's connected to a different element. Let's say, you know, the first chakra is related to the earth element. So then we teach them about it. We teach them practices to activate or balance that chakra, whether it be grounding or gardening, things like that. So when you take that knowledge and apply it in day-to-day techniques and life, that's how you start aligning and start balancing these energy centers. So the organs start working better, the emotions related to that center start clearing out, and that's how people usually do it. And what we do at the end of the program is we give them a daily practice where they're doing some breathing exercises, they're doing some chanting. If somebody really wants to take it you know, to an advanced level, we give them a daily practice. So that combines with some exercise, some breathing practices, and some chanting, because the sound vibrations really activate all the energy centers, and they're different sounds for different chakras.
Yeah. Would you say that understanding chakras through the lens of Hindu, you know, mixed mysticism, that it can help us to have a greater balance in our life, with harmony and peace and unity?
Oh yes, totally. It's gonna be life changing. Honestly, it's going to change the way you look at your life. It's going to change the way you look at your health. It's going to change the way you look at the abundance and the prosperity in your life. So the more you start focusing on this holistic approach, which combines not just ancient wisdom, but it relates to really what we're made of. We're made of fire, earth, air, water, and space. right? So when you start connecting those really esoteric things to very tangible things in the body, it sort of brings the whole thing together, and you start to feel different. You start to approach life in a much more holistic way. You know, it's not just about getting things done. It's also about why you're getting things done.
Yeah. You know, of the last few years or so here in the United States and all over the world, actually, we see where people are beginning to open all these yoga centers. And oftentimes you would see like the pose of somebody with their feet in the lotus position or something. But I don't think people truly understand that yoga is another powerful tool for understanding the chakras. So can you talk to us a little bit about some of the chakras, the root chakra, the sacral chakras, the solar ones, the throat? I was talking to my daughter this morning because she said she had a little sore throat. And I said, well, the lady calling in on my show today is going to talk a little bit about chakras. And I think you need to rest your chakra in your throat.
So, I mean, she could just do like take 5 minutes and do some om chanting.
Yeah.
Just do oh or do ah. That's going to clear out some of the things that are probably blocking her throat chakra. The root chakra is related to your house, you know, all the materialistic things that there are. The sacral chakra is all about emotions, sexuality, fluidity, creativity. It's your seat of self-expression, really. Then when you go up, we have the Manipura chakra, which is connected to your gut. It's your digestive fire. It's your place of willpower and action and how you really, how you do things in the world. You come up and then you have the heart chakra, which is called the Anahata. It is the center of love, how you relate to other people, your relationships, emotions. All of that is coming from the heart center. Your throat chakra is about speaking your truth. So each and every chakra can be underbalanced or overbalanced, you know, underactive or overactive. So you really got to see what's happening there in each center. Is it underperforming or overperforming? And then you adjust accordingly. So you know there's no one way to do things. You got to really see what's happening. You know, if it's underperforming, you just got to switch the gears up a little bit, and if it's overperforming, you got to switch it down. So you reach the throat, and then you have your third eye, which is in the middle of your eyebrows. It's really how you see things, the clarity in your mind, how you imagine, you visualize. That's where, you know, really visionary people have a very strong third eye chakra. And then the last one is on the top of your head, which is the Sahasrara chakra, which connects you to the cosmic energy. It's how you make sense of the world, how you understand how the world works. It's your place of understanding, of cosmic divine understanding, and to see how everything comes together in totality.
Well, I tell you, Mana, you're speaking with us from India, and we hear you loud and clear, thanks to Ellen, who is handling that WhatsApp call very well. And I want to go back to the one about the throat chakra. You know, oftentimes we hear people say things like, I want you to be thy brother's keeper in thoughts, words, and action. And you were just talking about the throat chakra, where we have a lot of people who say one thing and do the other. In other words, we have a lot of people that use this beautiful chakra of the throat, the voice box that God gave us to communicate and be good humans. And they use it for evil things, as in sometimes we hear even politicians or people who have leadership roles amongst us that they use. How can you and I and other people tell more people about the ability to speak and communicate and use that throat chakra well?
The first thing is not to lie. That if you're lying and if you're saying something and inside you're feeling something else, that's a big, you're doing your throat chakra a huge disservice. The second thing, what we really need to do is to not speak bad things about ourselves. What I'm seeing these days is people are self-diagnosing. They're saying, it's almost like a sin if you say something that's going against you, right?
Yes.
If you're even saying something like, I have anxiety. Like, that's the new age thing where people are just constantly saying those things. And that's the signal that they're sending their bodies, their minds, their souls. Forget about talking bad about other people. I feel oftentimes people are not even talking good things about themselves. They're saying, I'm too fat, I'm this, I'm that. It's the self-criticism that's coming out, not just for other people, but for ourselves. Is really sort of spoiling the voice or the power that we have to use this voice for good. So what people really need to do is to only speak for love. If you cannot say something nice, don't say it at all. That should be the go-to rule. If you cannot say something nice about yourself, just keep quiet.
Yes.
Speak your truth. That's what I would say. If you just...
Yeah, you know, when we were children, my mother would always say, you are what you eat, think, sleep, and breathe. And, you know, in Hinduism, I grew up as a Hindu, and I would go to all these prayers, and the pundits will speak in Hindi, and then they would explain it in English, because, of course, I was born and raised in Trinidad and Tobago. And they often talked about these chakras. And after I did the research for this show, I have renewed respect for those pundits that I was just chatting away and not minding the priest. And I would like to hear a little bit more about the heart chakra, because, you know, we have a heart center here in Melbourne, Florida, and there's a big heart on it.
Oh, wow.
And there's many doctors and medical professionals, and, you know, healthcare is a business here in the United States. And the first thing they ask you, what is your insurance card? Where is your insurance card? And can you afford to pay the copayment? But not people don't talk about these chakras enough in terms of how it can help our daily lives to prevent having to go to that heart center and be hooked up to a monitor.
Yeah, I mean, so the heart chakra is really where the magic happens. It's the center one, right? You have the bottom three chakras, which are the lower centers, and then you have the higher centers, the throat, the third eye, and the crown. But the heart is where the top flowing current and the bottom flowing currents meet. And when your heart is really strong, and when you're projecting a strong energy from the heart, you're magnetic, you attract things, right? And so the key to making the heart chakra strong is to give love, because when you give love, the heart comes into its power. Oftentimes we'll see people want love, you know, they're demanding love from other people, but the heart chakra comes into real alignment, real power, when it's giving, when it's in service of other people. That's really when the heart chakra becomes really strong. You'll notice, I mean, when you have anxiety, you have this thing on your chest, right? But when you're in the space of being happy and you're helping other people, you feel this expansiveness in the heart. So that's really where the magic happens. And I would just tell people, try to do something nice for somebody every day. Just do a small act of love and see how you feel when you give love to people. You're going to feel strong. You'll feel good in your relationships when you do that. But when you're demanding love, you're not going to feel all that great.
Well, you know, I think it's inherent of all of us on planet Earth right now to understand that at one point, we're all going to be gone. And we want to leave a good footprint behind for this generation, our grandchildren, and the next generation. Why do you think so many people have forgotten that this, I don't know if they've forgotten or they choose not to believe it, but they don't understand that God sent us here for a reason. It's like to find our purpose. It's a vacation on earth. And so many people take that for granted. They don't understand that life is short and sweet. How do we get more people, Mana, to understand that this life is as beautiful as you choose to make it?
Sita, I think one thing we all know for certain is death is coming for all of us, right?
Yes.
We have, like you said, we have limited time here. So we also just, I feel in this age, everyone should just slow down, because we're often caught up in wanting to do more, think more, get more. We should slow down and really get to know ourselves better, get to know our bodies better. It starts with the body, I think, Sita. If you really had to ask me, I think we know, people in general know very little about their own bodies and how it functions, and we take it for granted. And only when disease comes into our life is when we stop and take stock of things, right?
Yes.
So it starts with the body. It has to start with the body.
So, so it's like your body, mind, and spirit. Because so many people are not attending an organized religious compound anymore, but they say to you, oh, I've become more spiritual. And I think that's where getting in touch with your inner self and your heart, body, mind, and spirit, you know, comes in handy. And I want to segue a little bit away from the chakras and ask you some questions about about connecting with nature. Nature does play an integral role in balancing our chakras. So can you talk to us a little bit about the essentials? You know, at the Hindu prayers, they always talk about the earth, wind, fire. And it's so interesting that as I get older, all the elements and air, the five elements, now I see and I hear and I listen and I want to hear like the earth. People say when I walk outdoors, I feel better. When they breathe, they feel better. They say when they go to the ocean and they look at the waves, they feel better, right? So all these things that God gave us is free. It's free. Talk to us a little bit about the benefits of nature and our chakras and how it balances our bodies.
So the earth has a frequency. And when we tune into that frequency, the natural frequency, our chakras are tuning into that frequency. Because on a day-to-day basis, we're in high beta waves in brain. So, you know, when you walk bare feet in the ground, when you're looking at the ocean, when you dip your waters into the ocean, or you're into the mountains, you're in a jungle, you're in a forest, we're connecting to the sounds of the birds, we're connecting to the natural frequency of the earth, and the natural sounds of the earth. And that's when all the chakras, the body, the organs, the tissues and the muscles, they feel at home. That's why people tend to heal faster when they're surrounded by nature, right? So that's really the significance, because the earth is made of this huge sort of like a sound vibration. And the sound of the earth, the frequency of the earth, is what we really need to keep tuning into to keep our minds, to keep our bodies and our souls on track, on the track of health, you know? Because if you're detached for too long, we're going to get diseased.
Yes.
That's why it's really important.
Yeah, as I was preparing for the show, I was reading a lot about the imbalances, and I'm sure I'm going to butcher up this word, but it's the Manipura imbalance, which so many people in the United States, I know, and around the world,
all gut-related issues, constipation, gas, bloating, belching, IBS. IBS is a huge one, I believe. You know, it's all the Manipura chakra.
Yeah.
It's your digestive fire acting up.
Right.
So what you really need to do is to sort of do some core exercises. Light a candle and watch the flame, because the element of the Manipura is fire. So you got to just burn a candle and just look at the flame for 5 minutes in a day.
Yeah.
That's all you need to do. Eat less. Eat less food. I mean, it's just going to give your digestive fire some time to heal, because oftentimes we're just feeding ourselves too much. Take a break. Take a break from the food.
Yeah.
That's maybe what people can do instantly to get to feel better in their gut, in their stomachs, and to sort of start curing and start healing the Manipura.
Well, you know, here in the United States, a lot of people make a lot of money off of that. They call it intermittent fasting.
Which is great, actually.
It is. They adopt a lot of the practices from India, which is good. The other thing, too, there's so many people on medication in the United States. And we do have a mental health crisis in that, you know, you have brothers and sisters don't talk to each other. You have fathers and mothers estranged from their children. You have neighborhoods with beautiful houses and gated communities and no one speaks to each other. You have countries with leaderships that everyone wants power and control of land and resources and oil and human beings. But yet still you have the Anahata imbalance, which is the feelings of isolation and inability to express love. So talk to us a little bit about that one, because it seems as though the whole world needs some sort of balance.
Sita, for that one, that is a manifestation of the love that we give ourselves. If we don't love ourselves properly in the way that we should, if we don't care for our bodies in the way that we should, we cannot love another. So our tainted relationships are just an outward symbol for how we treat ourselves. The moment we start treating ourselves with respect, we take better care of our bodies, of our thoughts. Thoughts are really important, you know. Automatically, we'll start having better relationship with the things around us. It's going to heal itself. It starts with you. It doesn't start with the other. It starts with us and how the relationship we have with ourselves. Once we start to heal that, all the relationships start to heal around us.
Yeah.
Well, and so we give better love to ourselves. We feed ourselves better.
So in other words, be your own best friend. Be your own best friend.
Yes.
That's right. It starts with us. Look in the mirror. I do that every once in a while. I'll look in the mirror and say, "Hey, Sita girl, how you doing today?"
Everybody should do that.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Sita, I love you. Look at yourself in the mirror and say, "Sita, I love you. You're amazing. I'm going to give you healthy food today. We're going to go for a run, and we're going to help people around us." And you'll automatically see the things around you will start healing.
You know, I have a little altar at home, and I my deity is Lord Krishna, and I normally will pray and get
Thank you.
I have my flowers and everything. And my husband was raised in Iran, and so he was born Muslim, but he's not a non-practicing, but he loves all religion. And every once in a while, he'll say, "Tell your Krishna guy so-and-so for me." But what I find when I meditate, for my few minutes there, and I do my arti, I feel good. I can't put a finger on it, but that act of lighting my little diya and putting my fresh flowers, and sometimes I'll pick like the best rose, and then I'll be like, "Ooh, I just picked all these roses." But I'm like, why not give Krishna the best rose in the group outside, right? But I feel good because I think I gave it to him. I lit my light, and I talk and I tell him my troubles for the day, and I say, "Listen, you are in charge of troubles. I'm not. Take this and fix it for me, please." And I feel good. So would you say that the light is what helped me there?
I think it's your sort of emotion to surrender to something greater than you. And it's your emotion to sort of take that minute to connect to something that is far bigger than all of us. And it's when you set that intention in your day, even if it's just for 2 minutes, it really gives you back thousandfold, right?
Right.
And I think that's really what all of us need to do, is to take those 5 minutes and to believe and to surrender that we're protected, we're taken care of, and something far greater than us is protecting us and is going to make everything all right.
The supreme being. You know, my grandson is 4 and he started VPK today. And yesterday he was chatting with me and he told me that someone was asking him something about himself. And he said, "You know what I told him, Nanny? I told him that Lord Krishna and Jesus lives in my heart and they're my friends. They're my superheroes." I said, what a nice thing, you know, because I planted that seed for him. But before we go, we have a second or so left. Oh, my goodness. You know, your assistant told me that I would need 2 hours with you. Can you give us your website so people can find you and learn all about yoga and meditation and the 5 elements and the chakras and all the wonderful things you are doing in India?
So people can go to Instagram because that's where we're really active. You can type Om Mana Foundation, AUMANA Foundation, and everything you'll find on Instagram. You'll find all our resources, all our reels, a lot of free knowledge is posted. So everybody just come on Instagram and look for Mana, AUMANA, Om Mana Foundation.
Mana, before you leave, if you could answer this question in a minute, I would appreciate it. This was a question that someone had sent for me before. The question was, how do I know my chakras are balanced?
Is it when you're feeling good. When you're feeling energetic, you're feeling good about life, your chakras are balanced.
Right.
The moment you're having a little bit of doubt, restlessness, is when you need to sit down and take stock and, you know, center yourself.
And my friend Maggie's in the studio here, and she has a question about water. Go ahead, Maggie. Go for it.
Okay. Oh,
yeah.
Hi. Peter recently posted something about the importance of drinking water. And that really, really
resonated
with me because I love my sugar sodas and juice and things like this. Would you just emphasize something about the importance of drinking water, please?
So water, as we know, is obviously very important. But what we need to understand is water carries memory. So when you're having that water, have it with a deep sense of reverence. You give in a thought, you send a thought into the water. Water is going to energize me. It's going to heal me. It's going to activate
a
deeper sense of purpose. So if you say those things to the water, it's going to act in that way, because water carries memory. So water is obviously scientifically very important, but how you drink that water with reverence, with a lot of respect, and drink it slowly, feel the water go inside your throat, into your belly, into your stomach, is when the water really energizes and recharges and rejuvenates the entire system. You can send affirmations to the water. You know, you can say, water, you're curing this sort of illness that I have. You know, this is going to be a multi-powerful. You can just say things to water, and it acts that way in your body. So that's how you drink that water.
Well, you just made me think about my dad, because he would say, "Hey Brahma, hey Vishnu," every time he drank water and he ate food. And yeah. I would be like, "Why this guy always saying this stuff?" You know, but now I understand the Hindu text, and
he's speaking to the water. Yes.
Oh, goodness gracious!
Goes inside the water and activates that in your body.
Mana, thank you so much. Oh my goodness, Ellen will take it away from there.
Yeah, we are going to make sure we share all of this great information. I found your website, so I'll make sure I post that with all of the great details and that beautiful picture of you on the website, so everybody can connect with you in every way that they possibly can know how. Thank you so much for sharing your knowledge and wisdom with us today here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. We're going to listen to our sponsors real quickly, and we'll be right back.
All the way from India, Ellen. Give India a shout out. What state? Ask
India.
Her what state in India.
What state in India, Mana?
We are in Uttarakhand in a very nice hill station called Rishikesh.
Bollywood girls are coming.
Come visit our meditation center, and it's going to be beautiful.
Wonderful. Hi. Wonderful. We'll make sure we know just the travel agent. we're gonna listen to our sponsors real quickly. We'll be right back with Viewpoint with CNN Friends right after these messages.
Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. Delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County in Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture, 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at cloud9furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture. Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great-tasting seafood, char-grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads. 321-268-5000, 321-268-5000, or visit them on the web at dixiecrossroads.com. Jotkoff Financial Group is a certified public accounting and a registered investment advisory firm with over 30 years of productive relationships with clients. Jotkoff Financial Group can assist you in meeting your accounting, tax, and business consulting and financial planning and insurance needs without expanding your internal workforce. With three locations here in Florida, here in Brevard County, Broward County, and Nassau County, contact Jotkoff Financial Group here in Brevard at 321-984-7345, located at 1122 South Wickham Road in Melbourne. That's Jotkoff Financial Group. On the web, you'll find them at www.jotkoff, that's JOTKOFF.com. Call the professionals at Jotkoff Financial Group today.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in sunny Cocoa, Florida. We are heard on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and online everywhere on God's magnificent planet.
That's right. On 1510wwbc.com, you can hit that listen live button and get us on any one of your streaming devices. Of course, there we also archive the shows, which is under the on-demand button. You can pick by date. We're on each and every Monday, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And then, of course, we share it on all of our social media, which is Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, and on our website, which is SitaMediaInc.com.
What a wonderful first segment we had. So, I would say robust. Now,
you know, the cool thing is that we really all believe in the chakras and about the positivity. And if you're constantly thinking abundance, positivity, and gratitude, that good things will come to you. Not that bad things don't happen. I mean, stuff happens all the time. But your attitude towards them is such a huge boost in life. And so Mana really like described all of that, and really hopefully our listeners all will take that minute, like the 5 minute watching a flame. I've done that. Have you ever sat at a fire, like a fire pit?
Sure.
You know, outside a campground or something like that? I mean, fire has always memorized.
It depends on who you sit with sometimes.
Well, yeah.
Some people could do it by themselves. Yeah. But if you're with a bunch of friends and giggling and laughing and relaxing, it's fun.
It's yeah. soul healing, right?
It's
magnetic. Totally.
Yeah. Right. So, you know, sometimes, of course, our second segment, pretty soon, we have to see if Mike is going to have the time to call in. But, you know, sometimes you meet people and you say, I feel like I've known you all my life.
Yeah.
Right? And that is one of the chakras.
But it's also one of those connective things where you can see that, you know, namaste means that I can see the God in you.
Yeah.
Right. And I appreciate the God in you, or the spiritual being in you.
I'll tell you, these days I'm writing namaste a lot because I'm watching, right. You know, what's going on in the Middle East and all that. And, you know, while, you know, you see the beauty of life, you also see good and evil. And you see good and bad, and you're always telling people that, you know, namaste means the spirit that lives in me lives in you as well.
Right.
And so you want to see that in everyone, you know.
Right.
So,
and that healing power of those good connective friendships is so, you know, we always talk about that girls' night out and, you know, but I don't think that people really feel it that much deeper. And it's also with the band, right? All with that, you know, the music and stuff that we do. People ask me to do specific songs all the time, and I keep telling them like the lyrics don't connect with me, and you know, I'm not a sad person. I'm not like, my life is not falling apart like like there's a lot of country songs and stuff that it's like I just don't connect with, and I only want to sing songs that are going to be positive and things that connect with people, because that energy, they really feel it, like people in the audience, which is why people keep coming around and why people enjoy live music so much too, is because of the ability to be able to connect with people through different songs.
Well, our second segment, Al, that's great. We're supposed to have a guy call in, Mike Oppenheim, which we're going to try. We're going to try to call him now and see if he's still free to call in. But anyway, so let me tell my listeners a little bit about Mike Oppenheim. For the listeners who are tuning in today to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, so we sit here in the studio, and it's fun. It's really is. You know, sometimes I want to tell people being in this studio on Mondays is like being in my living room that's right. Pay rent for, and we have a lot of fun here. We speak to people about whatever platform they want us to give them, and of course, we know freedom of speech comes with a responsibility, and it's good because when I leave the studio, I feel like I learned something. Mm-hmm. It's like a university class 101. And so I'll just tell our listeners that Allie comes on Mondays. She's a friend of Ellen's, and she minds now.
Yeah.
And she started on the couch, and she said she elevated to the chair.
Oh, yeah.
Ellen is my co-host, and she does all. She's what keeps the show sane. And of course, Maggie Hickson is here today. Maggie is a world-renowned traveler, aka she's a flight attendant. She's a good friend of mine, and Danny runs our board.
And Mike is 3 hours. Difference time frame.
Thank God we
have goodness
phones.
We called him. Good job, Sita.
Yes. But anyway, so for our listeners, Mike, let me tell them a little bit about Mike. Mike is Mike Oppenheim is a writer. He's a musician. He's a cartoonist and a filmmaker. And he's a friend of Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. And he's on the phone. I don't want to take up a lot of his time because he's far away in a different state. Mike, talk to us a little bit about yourself and your podcast.
Hi, Sita. Thanks for having me on. I'm sorry about the time zone confusion. But
That's okay.
My podcast has actually taken off really successfully, and I'm shocked because I started it as a volunteer project, but it's called Coffin Talk. And I used to work in hospice, and I would help people here in Arizona in a dementia ward as they were dying. And I realized as I did this work that most Americans, in my perspective, my limited perspective, don't like to talk about death, think about death, or even face the subject of death. And that's much to the detriment of themselves and others when that moment finally comes. So I started a podcast called Coffin Talk, where I talk to living people.
And boy, I tell you, that word coffin gets me every time, because people would say, "Is it?" My friend said, "Is it? Did you misprint? Is it coffee talk or coffin?" I said, "No, it's a real coffin." Yeah. But I'm glad, I'm happy that you do that, Mike, because I'm also a long-term care nurse, and I've seen people at the end of life and what they say at the end of life and what they do at the end of life. And what I like about your podcast, in addition to all the other things you do, is you teach people how to find life with purpose. So talk to us a little bit about that.
Sure. Yeah. Yes, actually the best part of doing the show. You know, we all have things happen to us in life, and I've had my fair share of bumps and bruises along the way, but what those always teach me is to resilience, emotional resilience. So on the podcast, I like to focus on that with each guest. And I don't, usually when I book someone, they'll be like, "Oh, can you send me sample questions?" And that's impossible because I don't have sample questions. I just meet each person on the show, even if I know them, and I just start asking them about their life and why they made the decisions they made and then how that creates meaning in their life. And, you know, there's themes and popular answers, but my strategy is just to be as honest as possible at all times with people, and then that usually creates a good conversation, you know, like the ones we're having. So
yeah. And so what are the four things that people speak about just before they pass away, but that you have seen? Because what I see is, you know, we see so many people who fight over material things, whether it's car, house, land, clothes, money in the bank, rings, jewelry, whatever. But at the end of life, they ask about their children, if they're going to be okay. They ask about their pets, who's going to care for their pets. And they talk about regrets, things that they didn't get to do. And some also will ask for forgiveness. What do you hear or see or have you heard of at the end of life?
Yeah, I think there's really like the polar opposite of like two of the things you mentioned. It's either expressing deep regret, but with advice for the living, like the people they're leaving behind, or it's expressing immense gratitude and acknowledging that there was no regret. So it's very interesting. The main correlative that I see is people who work too much deeply, deeply regret that as they're passing. They wish they'd spent more time with family. They wish they'd even just spent more time walking in nature, taking trips, doing things for their spiritual side of their life. I think the work-culture balance has gotten way out of control, and a lot of us don't understand the compulsions that drive us. But you know, even on vacations, people end up working, and I've never, literally never, heard anyone say that they were glad they worked a lot.
Yeah.
I've never heard anyone mention that they were glad their book got published, that they were happy that their album was a chart topper. You know, it's like I've interviewed plenty of famous people, and none of them really care about the things that are on their Wikipedia page. They care about the intangible relationships they had. And so usually actually people who are aware they're dying tend not to have regrets. People who are fighting dying tend to have regrets, if that makes sense.
Yes. So you have created a space where positivity meets a purpose. And
yes.
Did you always know that you wanted to do this? What made you say, your aha moment that you said, this is what I'm going to do?
There were three of them, and they were like happened along the way. But when I was very young, my friend's mother fell off a bike and her arm was not moving for the next 3 days. She went to see a doctor and they said, this doesn't look good. You need to see a brain doctor. So they did a brain scan and she had a huge tumor, and she was given like 6 months to live. And I don't know to this day why this part of me exists, but I was drawn towards helping her. So my mom would bring me to her house and I would hang out by her bed day after day, week after week. And somehow at that age, I was able to sympathize with her and help her cope. And I watched her die. And then my mom had another friend passing away from cancer about 3 years later, and I helped her the same way. And then my mom a third time had me help another friend. And then I just started noticing that I'm comfortable around people who are not comfortable, and I'm able to, like, not calm them down, because that's just weird. I don't think it's accurate, but there's like a purpose to that. So then I started just throwing that out in regular life with everyone, just letting people talk. I'm good at listening. I'm very good at, like, just sitting and listening to someone and not waiting to talk. And I feel like that's actually what 99.9% of people want.
Yeah, they want a good listener, right? We had a guy had called in from Canada, and we spoke a little bit about compassionate listening, and it was quite a wonderful show. We enjoyed it. So you also have your personal journey about anger and grief and missing your son as well. And that's, mm-hmm. you open up and you carry a lot of burden in your heart, Mike, but you also find ways to talk about it. Even though the emotions are so raw, you're able to talk about it on your podcast as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there's a deep mystery to life, and I'm always searching for the answer, and I don't think I'll ever not be curious. And I think you're a fellow person like me. Like, I think you can sense it in others. But there's, you know, most people who interview and host shows are actually interested in learning from other people. And I think that it's, for me, that was a huge moment of my life. When I was 35, I got a divorce, and my wife at the time, and I had a soon-to-be two-year-old, and she kept trying to get more and more custody, and it wasn't working out, and so we had 50-50 custody. And then as a sincere offer of generosity and compassion, I told her she could take our son to visit her parents in the country of Thailand, and she went there, and then didn't return, basically. And so I had to cope with that. I'm still having to cope with that. And that's the main source of my compassion, actually, is that I felt like I didn't deserve it, and I was full of rage and anger, but there was no place to put that rage and anger. I don't like feeling those feelings. So I started really working on sitting in feelings, just letting feelings exist. And then I started writing about it because I'm a writer. So I'm kind of trying to serve all these purposes at once. You know, there's definitely a lot of people in our culture who don't know how to appropriately grieve, but also don't know how to deal with anger. And we tend to label people who have, like, temper tantrums in public as angry people. But I think there's no such thing as an angry person. I think each of us funnels that emotion into different behavior.
So you funneled yours into writing, because there's a beautiful poem on your website. One of the places where I found you, I'm called Tomorrow. And I read it, and it's beautiful. Did you write that poem, or someone else did?
I'm not exactly sure which one you're referring to, but I do write poetry, so it's probably me, but I don't know.
Yeah, it says, tomorrow I'll think of you just like today, with echoes of laughter that never fades away, something like that. Your name is carved in my chest. It's probably you speaking about your boy.
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, God.
Yeah, no. It all just comes out, you know?
Yeah. So, Mike, how does someone find you if they wanted to be on your podcast? Can you give us your website? Because, you know, when we put your name in, a lot of stuff comes up, because in addition to writing, you're also doing other things.
Yeah. The main place to find everything I've ever done in the history of my life is at my website, mikeyopp.com. And you can also go to coffintalkpodcast.com. I can spell them out real quick. MikeyOpp.com. And then the same, if you enter Coffin Talk, COFFINTALK, podcast, PODCAST.com, both of them direct you to that. And then there's just little tabs at the top for novels, essays, podcasts. And then if someone wants to come on the podcast, just go to that site. You may have to subscribe to write me the email, but you can subscribe and unsubscribe. I don't care. I'm not like that with the show. I just love having interesting guests on. So if you're interested in coming on the show, for sure, please let me know.
I know you did offer me before, but I tell you the time. So you also do a writing workshop, and you edit. You're also a copy editor as well. Are you working on any good books right now?
Yeah, well, I book index and also copy edit, and I do more of the indexing. So that's when I get, like, a advanced copy of something, and then I have to read the whole book and make the index. Unfortunately, I sign non-disclosures for anything I'm working on currently, so I can't
talk
about them. But I've done, like, some really amazing biographies. I did one on Hunter S. Thompson that ended up being on the New York Times bestseller. And while I have little to nothing to do with that, I love to tell people that at dinner parties because it's just a fun conversation topic. But I read intensely and obsessively and all day, every day. So.
Yeah. So on your show, Coffin Talk, when the guest comes on and you have a variety of guests. I was on there. You have people from all walks of life and classes and political affiliations. And it's amazing some of the great advice they give us about communication and thought processes and all these things. And so I want to ask you now, do you ever have guests that you know, when they're sitting with you there, they talk about, you know, why am I here? What was my purpose on earth? Do you have people that question why we are here as human beings on planet earth before we end up in that coffin?
Yeah, I have a lot of those, and I try to, my brother and my wife helped me with the podcast, so my brother's our main booking manager, and then my wife is our producer, so she does more of the scheduling, so I'll do the interviews in whatever order they funnel them to me, but we try to space them out, so the category you just referred to, I would call, like, metaphysical by nature, and I think some of the best ones I've had are scientists who work in the near-death experience field. And then there's one guest, I always mention this whenever anyone asks about the show. It's episode 54, and we're about to release episode 242, just to give listeners perspective. But if you find episode 54, it's with this man named Christian Sundberg. I believe he's like 43 years old now, and he claims to remember what life is like before you're born. He calls it prenatal existence, and it's a mind-blowing interview. He makes no money. He doesn't sell anything. He doesn't do, like, speaking engagements. He's just unlike any other guest I've ever had who claims to understand a little bit more about the meaning of life than the average Joe. And I was compelled to read his free book. And I'm not like a believer so much as it had never occurred to me that we might really be something much larger than this life, and then that we're actually picking we're picking our incarnations. Like, we're like actually choosing events in ahead of time, and then we get to react to them in real time. So what he led me to believe is that there's both predetermination and free will working at the same time, and that's why some things feel like coincidences and other things feel like, you know, God's grace or predeterministic.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people are beginning to believe in all this life after death experiences and spirituality. Mm-hmm. You also had a guest on there. Her name was Jessica Morris, and I read a little bit mm-hmm. about her, an author and a spiritual director and a recovering addict, and she had a lot to say. She was the daughter of a minister, and I thought mm-hmm. that was an interesting topic as well. You do a lot of shows on spirituality.
Yeah, definitely, and it's definitely a huge part of my thrust in my 40s. It's just embracing that I'll never know, but that trying to know is very encouraging. It's not discouraging.
Yeah.
The more time I spend talking to people from every religion, the more I respect the decision to focus on spirituality.
Yeah, and I know that your wife is a big part of the show. Did you, when you first started the show and you called it Coffee Talk, did you have any pushback from people?
Coffin Talk. Yeah, no, I understand. Yeah. No, when I was a child, or I guess in my teens, Saturday Night Live had a funny skit called Coffee Talk with Mike Myers, the one who played Dr. Evil.
Yeah, we all remember that. Yeah. He had a big wig on. So he had a wig on and gigantic earrings.
Yes. So it's basically just making fun of that. So if you're in our age, you know, demographic, you hopefully get the joke. But the other reason that I wanted to do it is I do want people to understand, especially guests, that we're not going to shy away from the talk of the death. This isn't like a podcast you put in the car with your friend who's dying if they don't want to face it. You know, it's definitely my wife is the main reason I started it, the main reason I didn't quit doing it, and she still is a huge reason I'm doing it. She really believes in it and really believes in me using my speaking talents for something greater than just, like, you know.
Yeah, and I appreciate you doing it too, because, you know, you would find people that are afraid to talk about the end of life. And I do believe that around Christmas time, Thanksgiving, 4th of July, Father's Day, Mother's Day, I think families should bring up these topics and find out, what do you want done at the end of life? And what is it we can do while you're alive to promote forgiveness and love and harmony and peace? Because so many families are broken up and they leave the planet with broken family members as well. And I can't stress enough, you know, how important it is for people to understand that we're just here for a short time and we all make mistakes. Nobody's perfect. We all fall short. God knows I have a lot of dysfunctional people in my group, a few crooks, a few smart ones, a few intelligent ones, professionals. But at the end of the day, we do love each other and we try to make it work.
Yeah, I think you phrased that perfectly. I could not disagree with a single word you said. It's really, really true.
Well,
and I think that, yeah.
I'm going to let Allie jump in here. I see she's smiling away. I think she wants to say something. Go ahead, Allie.
Hey. Sure. It's so fascinating. Do people, when they get close to passing, are there things they wish they had done or wanted to make sure, ensure that they've spoken to you about so that somebody knows what's been on their mind that they never said out loud?
Yeah, in an hospice, like in a small room where it's quaint, I mean, it's just so often I wish I'd worked less. And then also, I wish I hadn't said that to that person. It wasn't important to say that. I could have just kept that to myself. Like a lot of that, just, you know, we think we're helping people sometimes when we're being critical and we're trying to get them to do something. But ultimately, each person's on their own unique mission and we have our own headspace and consciousness. And it's really, I think people start to realize towards the end of life or when they know they're going that it wasn't ever helpful to be pushy with someone else's free will, that it's good to answer questions and be there for someone. But when you start stepping into their life and trying to tell them what to do, that's like the main regret I would hear aside from working too much.
Yeah. Ellen wants to jump in here real quick.
I see that you're a musician as well. And we were talking just before you had come on about the fact of how people connect to music and connect in such a way, not just from a memory standpoint, but also even those folks that have passed, you know, our friends and family that have passed. So I just wondered if music has become part of your therapy, if you will, or giving back or coffin talk or.
Yeah, I mean, music's my first love and will always be my main love. And it's definitely been something that I've spent pretty much, we used it like for therapy. I worked in a dementia ward in hospice for a long time. And so those patients were really interesting because they would be like very lost. And then if you put on a song from their youth, they would snap up. And I think
Caroline, that's the one that we play all the time.
I played it in assisted living not that long ago. It was a dementia place as well.
And they love it.
And it was the same thing. And it was, but weird, it was Men at Work. I mean, the weirdest songs that they were connecting to that I was expecting them, you know, I don't know, in my head, I think
you
I still
to
think.
A happy time.
Yeah, exactly.
But Mike, we have 30 seconds left, and I wanted to ask you really quick, what part, how big of a role does fate play in your life? Because in order to talk about the death and the dying process, you have to have faith. You have to believe in something higher, a higher power than yourself, so that you could tell your listeners about that. So I would assume that fate plays a great part in your life.
Yeah, it does. And it's faith in everything being exactly as it should be. So faith and acceptance. And that took a long time. And that goes back to my child and my son and what happened with him. You have to have faith at all times that you're in the right place with the right mission and that you are equipped to handle whatever it is that you think you can't handle.
Yeah. I think one of the taglines for your show should be live every day as it comes. Every single day is a new day. It's a new beginning because it's beautiful what you're doing, and you help us, you know, human beings here in the United States and elsewhere to face death with dignity, and you give us hope so that people can talk about it and not be afraid of it. Because then when you know that you're going to leave the planet, you do good things. That dash that we all talk about, you will see that your dash is filled with good things.
Thank you, Tita. I really appreciate that.
It's amazing. Well, thanks again, Mike, coming on and speaking with us about your show, Coffin Talk. We'll make sure we share all of that on our social media pages as well as our website, CETAMediaInc.com. CETA, another fantastic episode of Viewpoint with CETA and Friends. Thank you again so much. Thank you for everybody for joining in on the conversation.
Even Maggie.
We'll be back. I know, even Maggie. We will be back each and every Monday, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on 1510 WWBC.